All right, hello again, and welcome to I've Gotta Beat Mortal Kombat Annihilation, a podcast within a podcast about my one-year journey to defeat 1997's Mortal Kombat Annihilation. I'm Chris, I'm your host, your podcast pal, and tonight I just got done watching Mortal Kombat Annihilation for the 363rd time.
Jesus Christ.
I had our tonight's special guest here with me, Den of Geeks, Gavin Jasper.
Pleasure to be here. Good to watch that movie again.
Yeah, and how long had it been since you'd seen that movie?
Since it came out in theaters in 1997.
Wow. Okay, so 20 years.
20 years.
We're here. We're hovering around the movie's official 20th anniversary. Which is just something horrible to think about, that this movie has been a part of people's lives for 20 years, and now for almost an entire year of mine. So for people, let me start by asking you, why are you here tonight? Because the circumstances are a little interesting.
So I've written a lot of stuff over the years, different places, and I've kind of been known as a guy who knows too much about Mortal Kombat in general, especially yeah. the mythos of it all. And right. This one guy, Dr. Magnificent, he's a guy I honestly vaguely know. I've talked to him online, but he's more of a fan of mine. He's a really nice guy from what I've...
Yeah, I was about to ask, is this guy a friend or a fan or an enemy to make you have to watch this movie?
No, he reads my stuff. He's a fan. Right. He said some very nice stuff, and I really appreciate that. And he's always seemed really cool, dude. And yeah, I guess he like donated to your Patreon and yes. And
thank
put my
you very
name
much,
down.
Dr. Magnificent.
And it was funny though, because like he did that back in I want to say September, because I remember finding out about this on Twitter,
right?
Between like a discussion with you two, and I was with my friend David Berzin, and I was like, what is this about? He's like, and he just knew about it, like just a friend of mine. He's like, he's just like explaining the whole thing, and I'm like, that's right. Complete madness, yeah, and I can't wait.
So yeah, unfortunately it has taken me a long time to get this to get. I mean, and to be fair, while I have held steadfast in my in my pursuit, my challenge of watching this movie every day so far, the keeping up with the organizing and recording and just wrangling people into watching it with me part for the podcast part has been less successful. Oh. But you know, that's how these things go sometimes. But so why Mortal Kombat? Why for you is Mortal Kombat a thing that you know too much about?
I was the right age for it when it came out, and I'm one of those guys who I love fighting games like Street Fighter and all those other ones, and right. I'm one of those people who just is way too interested in the storyline, like the why it's happening, and I don't know, I just like the characters and the overall story, and I just like maybe the idea of it's
sort of like the mythology of Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, no, like the series, the games have like a really good like world to it.
Because this movie is not indicative of that.
No, it's like they tried too hard, but not. It's like they tried too hard, but not hard enough. Almost.
It seems like with the second one, they were a little bit. It's kind of odd. I mean, and this is part of why this movie is so baffling to me, because and. Part of the deal with this movie, it's not like when I watched it that, you know, that first night or second night or whatever, before the idea had started to formulate of that I was going to do this thing with it. It's not like I watched it and then had to watch it again because it was so bad. It's because it was like baffling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely bad, but the choices that were made are just so puzzling. And it makes you, I get this feel from the movie that it's kind of like parts of it are really goofy and silly, but then there's parts of it where they're like trying to shy away from some stuff, like they're embarrassed of the property, but it seems like in completely wrong directions.
You know, I realized right now, one of the things that really makes it feel off is in terms of adaptations, the first Mortal Kombat movie is based on the story of the first game, which is, you know, it works out. It's kind of like it's grounded enough that the human characters, we can like we understand what's happening through their eyes. The second movie is based on the third game. So it kind of just like the whole second game is kind of skipped over completely.
Right.
And it just kind of goes straight into we go from A to C.
Yeah.
And it's just completely it's like then they got to like sum up stuff from the second game and just there's just too much. And they have to cram in so much and it doesn't even know what it's doing.
I was going to say, I thought that this movie may have possibly come out like a little bit before the third game, but I guess that's not right.
No, that was the first one. First one came out right as the, because the first one came out right when the third game was coming out because the third game had like all these special codes that you could put like when you're about to play like two player, they had like all these special like little codes and the end credits actually I think like had one of those codes on there.
Oh, okay.
Or I might be thinking of something else. That might have been the really weird cartoon prequel that, they made.
That would have been some great marketing, you know, crossover synergy marketing if they had done that. if they did, that's smart.
Yeah. Now this one was because this one has the main villain is Shinnok, Shao Kahn's dad. And
but he doesn't really do anything.
No, he doesn't. No. And you know what? The sad thing is he looks less ridiculous in the movie than he does in the games.
What does he look like in the games?
He looks like this weird, like a cross between a clown and a guidance counselor.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to look up some pictures of him.
Yeah. You know what? There was a game.
He's got like the white face with like the black eye stuff. Or am I thinking of someone else?
He's got a white face. He wears like a weird headdress thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he has like green eyes. But yeah, like a good way to see him is they made a game years ago called Mortal Kombat Mythology Sub-Zero, and it was like a side scroller game where you play as Sub-Zero. It was a prequel. And that was the first game to have Shinnok in it. And they had like live action cutscenes, which are atrocious and amazing. And
yeah, that's what you want.
And Shinnok is basically like the Satan of the Mortal Kombat, you know, storyline. And he looks so sad when he shows up there. Like Shao Kahn is like a metal, metal album cover. Yeah. Come to life.
Got the skull helmet and the spikes and
the giant hammer. Like he looks like a badass. Right. And Shinnok was like always it's like, oh, so that's what you go to. That's how you follow Shao Kahn. You go to weird wizard jester thing.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to have to post some pictures of him in the show notes now so people can really get a good mental image of what this guy looks like. as you're completely dunking on him.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was the villain of like Mortal Kombat 4 and which did not go over too well. Cause that was when the games went like from 2D from like actors being like digitized to 3D, but it was like mid 90s 3D.
Right.
So we weren't really ready for that yet.
Yeah.
And everything just looks like complete garbage.
Mid-90s 3D could not handle what this game needed, what that world needs. What is it about Mortal Kombat that sort of really got its hooks into you?
It's got this really cool atmosphere, especially the first – well, even the first three games. The first three games had like this really interesting like B-movie like weirdness to it. People make the comparison to like Big Trouble in Little China and stuff. And it's just, it's just this weird, like almost like colorful grindhouse type thing. But like the characters are really, for the most part, pretty cool. And, you know, this is not the only adaptation to completely screw it up. There was a Saturday morning cartoon show.
Right.
I mentioned earlier, there was like a, and this is really bad. There was like an animated thing that they released on VHS to hype up the first movie. And the animation is terrible. I mean, you think that the CGI in Annihilation is bad. They like have these like CGI fight scenes. And this is like sub PlayStation 1 level.
Wow. Okay, so truly a well, now I got to find this.
And there was also the Mortal Kombat live stage show.
Okay.
I don't know if you ever heard of that, but that was like, it was just like a bunch of actors like running around doing like martial arts and like acrobatics and stuff on stage while telling kids to stay in school.
It's just like travel around to malls or something, or what?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. And so, and that's what these two things are, the things that really made you love it.
No, I'm just saying, how dare you?
Yeah.
No, but I'm just saying, like, they've tried to, like, I don't know. There's like a really cool, like, in the current games, now that they could actually do more, like, cinematic scenes, they're able to, like, do cool storylines and stuff. But back then, it was just, like, you know, it just, there was a lot of cool, you know, for lack of a better term, mythos to it.
Yeah.
An atmosphere.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. I mean, I think that's something that's kind of like great about Street Fighter and about, you know, or Street Fighter 2, I should say. And then like the first Mortal Kombat and so, some of those fighting games like that, where it's just, okay, here's a tournament and there's hints of a richer world behind it. And you get like those little pieces of the story and certain things. But I think that what, you know, sort of makes those things so exciting as a video game, or at least as a video game back then, was that, you know, we didn't really know all the story. And so it was interesting and exciting and, you know, you were kind of trying to fill in the blanks your own or like imagining what it was. And so then every time they try to do some kind of adaptation that sort of tries to make sense of all of that in a, you know, in a linear story, I feel like something is gets lost in the translation.
No, that's a good point. And I think part of it, one of the things that makes these games so great, and I don't just mean Mortal Kombat, I mean like all the different fighting games, is that it's very multiple choice for the story. Like, yeah. You don't have, I mean, like Liu Kang kind of sucks. And I don't want Liu Kang to be the main character.
Right.
So I could make Sub-Zero the guy who wins, and he gets his own epilogue, and we get to see like what would happen if he was the guy who saved the day. And yeah, it's like everyone's on kind of like an even playing ground instead of just being an extra.
Right. It's not just one person's story. It's like they would have to have done the movie where you got to go in and then pick which character you wanted to follow.
Exactly.
Which would
instead of being like, why is Scorpion only in this for 2 minutes?
Yeah.
No, that not even 2 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, which would be like an amazing gimmick for a movie if everybody could come in and then like sort of pick their own version of the movie. That would be really amazing. But of course, I'm sure that would be monstrously expensive.
Yes.
You know, and it's like they couldn't even get this right. So speaking of which characters, picking the character you like, who is your favorite Mortal Kombat character? I think I have a clue, but I'll go ahead and ask you.
Well, you know, actually, if I mention, I did do, because I like, as a writer, I like doing really excessively long writing projects for, you know, sites like Den of Geek. And one of them was I decided to rank every Mortal Kombat character from worst to best, which was...
What kind of a grading scale did you use?
Oh, just like, you know, I mean, just who I thought like had a cool backstory, who I thought...
Completely just personal preference?
Yeah, like personality, just is like, you know, I just thought, you know, yeah, just personal preference, like not who's like the strongest or anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the end, the second Sub-Zero. At him is number one.
So, and what, since the second Sub-Zero shows up in this one, what puts him over the top for you over, you know, Scorpion or the first Sub-Zero, et cetera?
He's an interesting character. He's like, you know, he starts off as just kind of like this assassin who's kind of loyal to his group, but then he realizes that they're all insane. Like, you know how they have those robots in the movie?
Yeah.
That is like his ninja clan decides, like, yeah, we're going to turn all of our ninjas into robots. Yeah, we're going to RoboCop all of our ninjas. And so she was like, that is a terrible idea, and I want nothing to do with it. And then they kind of like hunted him down. And he became this kind of like almost man without a country type of guy, because he's the, you know, he's like a redemptive figure. He doesn't want, you know, he wants to like go off against his like, you know, evil ninja clan. But the other like good guys don't really trust him.
Right.
And also he has like this really complicated storyline with like Scorpion, who killed his brother in the games. And, you know, he just like becomes, he ends up becoming kind of this mentor character. In the latest game, he has like an awesome beard. Yeah.
The ultimate, cool factor in a video game protagonist.
Everyone, because the latest game is like, I mean, it skips forward like 25 years or something.
Yeah.
And all the old characters, almost all of them have beards now. Everyone except Johnny Cage.
And then it's like Johnny Cage and Sonya have got like a daughter who's also like some kind of special agent or special forces.
Yeah, exactly. And she's the hero. And in the end, she's the one who kills Shinnok.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because like
it's been out for a while, so I think it's fine.
Oh, yeah. Because the weird thing is, like, the games came out for so many years, and the story of the games got, like, a little too weird and just kind of petered out to the point that one of the games was...
I was going to say, getting too weird for this franchise has got to really be saying something, too.
Well, one of the games was, like, the big... Midway, the company that was making them at the time, this is right before they went bankrupt... their big like ploy was, this game's going to have everybody in it. Like anyone who was ever in Mortal Kombat.
Right.
And this whole storyline was a big king of the mountain. Like a pyramid shows up, everyone fights. That's the storyline.
Well, so, that's all you really need for a fighting game, I guess.
Right. But like at that point, they're like, where do we go from there?
Yeah.
And then they made a game, which was like a reboot sort of like where Raiden goes back in time and completely screws up the timeline.
Which one was that?
It was just called Mortal Kombat, but it was like people call it Mortal Kombat 9.
Oh, okay.
It came out like about 5 years ago.
Was that the one that was it?
The one with Freddy Krueger in it.
Okay. I was going to ask like what the fight style in it was, but, was it the, oh shoot. I'm trying to think of what the look, it was basically like, was it basically like 2D or was it one of the ones that was,
I mean, it's 3D, but it plays 2D.
Okay.
But yeah. So then they like, yeah, that was like basically a retelling of the first three games. Only Raiden completely screwed up everything by trying to change the past. And like so many people die because of it.
Oh, well, good one. I mean, he does not have the best track record as far as I've seen.
No, he really doesn't.
He maybe should just like chill out on getting involved, period. It seems like that might be for the best. So, well, I mean, since, you know, you clearly know way more about, see, and that's the thing is like, I liked, you know, playing the first like two Mortal Kombat games, maybe a little bit of the third one, but I never got into like I never really cared about the mythology of it. And like, I didn't see this movie until a year ago. I'd seen the first one like back when it came out, but I, as someone who knows a lot about the Mortal Kombat, so now it's like I know a lot about this movie just in particular, but I don't know much about Mortal Kombat in a broader sense. So the vibe that I got and from talking to other people who have known like a little bit more about Mortal Kombat than me is that this movie just takes a lot of liberties and really plays around with people's characters and just basically does not gets a lot of things wrong.
Yeah. I mean that whole weird twist that Raiden and Shao Kahn are brothers and Shinnok is their dad. Like that is the equivalent of saying like Thanos is actually the dad of Dr. Doom and Nick Fury. Like if okay. they just threw that at us.
Yeah, just out of nowhere. So that's not, I feel like I heard that there's like one game somewhere says that the two of them are brothers, but it doesn't say anything about Shinnok being, and then that's also been ignored since then. Something.
Yeah,
like
I mean,
that.
I don't remember that ever being mentioned or even like alluded to at all.
I feel like there was something that was like some one-off thing that said something about them being brothers, and then nothing else is, or everything else is basically just gone like, nah, forget that.
Yeah.
So there's, I mean, you would agree then that, I'll ask this a better way. Is there anything from this you feel like rang true? Anything it got right?
The basic idea that, I mean, the basic plot was the plot of Mortal Kombat 3 was like Shao Kahn resurrected Sindel and used her as some kind of like loophole to merge like Outworld and Earth into like one kind of weird hybrid.
Okay.
I mean, that was like a thing. Right. Like rarely ever like really showed in the games until like that reboot that they did right. when they could actually like make really cool like backgrounds and cutscenes about it.
Okay. But, and that's basically it.
Yeah, I mean, like, the characters look like how they're supposed to. I'll give them that.
Now, Jax is supposed to have no arms, though, right? Are those supposed to be just robos? In the movie, they're just, like, robo sleeves. But my impression was always in the games was that something had happened where his arms had gotten cut off. Like,
yeah, okay, so, like, in Mortal Kombat 2, he was normal. He was just a shirtless dude you know, completely cut. Yeah. And then when they made Mortal Kombat 3, they decided to give him metal arms because it was the 90s and that's what you do.
Yeah.
And they never, like, at the time, they never gave an explanation. They just said that he just had him added on. And there was, like, you know, there was a Malibu Comics had a Mortal Kombat comic.
Right.
And they explained it as, like, Baraka just, like chopped his arms up, like, okay. And there was like terrible damage to him, so they had to add the metal.
That must have been where I got that, because I remember that. I've like vaguely remember that comic, and I always assumed, like, my recollection of it from back then was that he got a Baraka cut his arms off.
Right. And because that comic was kind of also very weird, and But the like then when they did the reboot thing, they finally showed what happened where Jax like confronted Ermac, the red ninja guy.
Right.
Yeah, the guy who's just there at the end,
yeah,
hanging out with Shao Kahn. And Ermac is this weird, like telekinetic god almost. Like his whole thing is that he's made of like 1,000 souls.
Sure.
In a human form. And Jax tries to fight him because he's a dude and this is a warrior made out of 1,000 souls, and Ermac just telekinetically blows his arms up.
Wow. That's much cooler.
Yeah. Oh no, it's way cooler. Then he gets the metal arms added on.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Ermac was not especially cool in this movie.
No, he wasn't. Well, he wasn't, you know, for a while. It took a while for him to, like, figure out what his deal was, because originally he was just, like, this weird, urban legend that the fans came up with.
Oh, okay.
Like, the secret red ninja.
Yeah.
And then by the time they came out with, like, the special version of Mortal Kombat 3, Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3, they just decided, since we're just making a million ninjas because we have the same sprites for them.
Yeah, just doing palette swaps on the colors.
Yeah, it's like, just throw an Ermac. They couldn't even figure out who he was yet, like didn't give him a storyline yet. They're just like, yeah, just Red Ninja Ermac. People love this.
Yeah. And then, I mean, did the fans like make up that name too, or was that something else?
Yeah, because it was like part of, I don't know if it was like, I think it was EGM, Electronics Game Monthly, like I think they might have been the ones who printed the rumor, but like they claimed that it was supposed to mean like error macro or something, which was like something that showed up on the in the arcades,
right?
Like some weird message, and people were like, "Error macro. Oh, that must mean Ermac, who is a red ninja."
Sure,
I don't know. It's
all these old like pre-internet.
Oh, it was crazy back then
about video games and stuff like that. Where it's just the only way you heard about things was from other people.
No, you heard of everything from somebody whose uncle worked at Nintendo.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how everybody like that is such a universal thing of that time, and it's so weird to me that everybody like knew somebody like that.
Yeah, everyone like all over the country, like that was there was no part of the video game playing, you know. Kids of the time where someone, you know, that lie didn't touch them, regardless of what the made up thing was. Oh, those were fun days.
Yeah. You would believe any BS that happened.
Oh yeah.
That like sure. That someone came up with.
I think it was one of those things like people were just desperate to have something to say, just something to like something to make you to get everybody's attention at the arcade or whatever.
Exactly. And we didn't really understand the limitations of what video games could do.
Right.
And it's just like, yeah, there's like an extra 10 guys you could fight in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Sure.
Oh, man. Now I just want to find more of these old like video game urban legends. Well, all right. Are you ready for the I've got to beat Mortal Kombat Annihilation questions?
Hit me.
Okay. All right. Question number one. As best as you can, explain the plot of Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
All right. Plot of Mortal Kombat Annihilation is that even though Liu Kang was able to defeat Shang Tsung in the Earth's last chance at survival, Shao Kahn basically invades Earthrealm regardless. And at first they think it's because he resurrected Sindel and used her as some kind of beacon or something. But in actuality, it's because his father, Shinnok, who is an elder god, is secretly screwing around. And now it's up to the heroes, minus Johnny Cage, to stop him.
That's very concise. Now, I think that there's basically, unless you just, you know, have something go terribly wrong with your brain all of a sudden, I think you're going to do the best at this of anyone so far. But question number two, how many characters from the movie can you name?
Oh, okay. Let's see. Johnny Cage, Liu Kang, Sonya Blade, Jackson Briggs, Raiden, Ermac, Shiva, Motaro, Shao Kahn. Shang Tsung does show up in a flashback. Nightwolf, right. Jade, Melina, Cyrax, Smoke, Sub-Zero, the second one, Scorpion, who is back from the dead. There are Tarka 10 warriors, but it's not explicitly said that it's Baraka.
Right.
That might be... Oh, Shinnok. And there's a deleted scene of Quan Chi at the very least. Oh, and also Rain and, yeah, I think that's it. I think that's all I got.
Okay. Well, you have beaten our previous record holder who named 16 of the characters. You did 21. So, wow. Yeah, good job. Congratulations. All right. Question number three. Mm-hmm. Did you like this movie?
No. God, no. Yeah. When I was younger, so I was 15 when this came out, and I, for some reason, because I was very hyped for it, I liked the first one, and you know, I liked Mortal Kombat. I, for some reason, had the novelization of the movie.
Yes, I have it sitting right here in front of me, actually.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, very awesome. So I read that, and I don't know. I was just still – maybe because I saw it on the page and my imagination was stronger than
– Oh, man. The dialogue in this novelization is like so much more – there's like more artistry and writing strength in like one page of this than in the entire movie.
Okay, so it's not. So I'm not completely insane then. Okay, good.
I mean,
because I read that and I'm like, all right, I'm ready for this. This could be good. And my entire life, I've never, ever walked out on a movie. But I remember sitting there and not 5 minutes had passed. Like, it's still in – there's still the opening scene.
Yeah, just still getting things set up.
And I'm just thinking, oh, this is bad. should I leave? I don't know if I want to deal with like an hour, 20 minutes more of this.
Right.
But I stuck through it because I'm like, I already paid.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny to think that you even thought that like as a teenager.
Yeah. It's like I didn't even drive here. I'm 15.
And I want to leave. Yeah. Well, I mean, so was this just when you saw this as a kid, was this just like devastating?
Yeah. Like sometimes I'll see a movie and there's that time where you're like, that was pretty good. Like, you know, if you see Phantom Menace.
Right.
And it's there's that feeling of like, that was good. Yeah. Jar Jar wasn't that bad. No, yeah. Come on. And then like it dawns on you later. Oh no, that was bad.
Yeah, man. When Phantom Menace came out, like, and you know, I definitely did not have like the critical thinking skills yet to like really understand how awful it was. Like, 'cause I remember leaving the theater, you know, after that midnight screening of Phantom Menace, just like completely stoked and just like so excited. And like me and my buddies are like, you know, coming out high-fiving and just excited. And, you know, and then we went and saw it three more times the next day and we're still just like, man, this is so awesome. But like, there was one of those things where you're, I mean, and I know we're not trying to talk about Star Wars here, but that was one of those things where it's like, even though I couldn't understand why, on some level, the more I watched it, the more I realized as like, there's just something isn't right with this.
Yeah.
But it's weird to have those kind of moments. So you definitely had that kind of feeling watching, you know, coming out of this, or, well, I guess, yeah, I mean, you said it 5 minutes in, you were already like, maybe I should get out of here.
Yeah, like I didn't have any like rose colored glasses going into this.
Even though you had read the novel, that's amazing.
Yeah, I was just like, it just, the atmosphere of the movie is just so toxic.
Yeah. I wish that I could have seen this when I was, you know, back when it came out, to see if like what kind of an impression it would have had on me then. Because anything that I think if I had been into anything enough to read the book beforehand, mm-hmm. going into the theater, then I would have been too excited to have like the like critical thinking going on.
I would to have like the rug pulled out from under you.
Yeah. If I had been excited enough about this at the time to read the novelization before it came out, I probably would have gone to the movie and been like, that was awesome. I mean, I would look back on that and feel dumb, but that's just knowing myself. I bet that's what would have happened if I had seen this when I was a kid when it came out.
I mean, another thing that just hits me about like what was so bad about the movie is the first movie is this weird. It came out like during this window of the mid 90s where CGI was just starting to become a thing.
Yeah.
Like as a regular thing. And it didn't matter how bad it looked. We were blown away by it.
We were still excited just by seeing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, and then, so it just kind of like at that time, it looked really good, right. Even though now it like doesn't. But a couple years pass and you get Annihilation and the CGI is even worse.
Yeah.
In a time when we're accustomed to it being better.
Yeah.
And it just sticks out like a sore thumb so badly.
Yeah, and it's so weird to think that this movie, you know, it came out 2 years later, cost twice as much to make, and somehow looks so much worse. And this
is
like,
it really does.
This is like one of the mysteries about this movie that I am just like, I have wanted to, you know, unravel over this course of this year that I still haven't, is just like, where did this money go? There's no stars in this movie. There has to be some, you know, like, of course, my theories all center around there being, you know, there's some producer or producers who were like, oh, we're going to buy a, you know, a truck full of cocaine and have a second, you know, floor put on our houses. And that's where the money went. But I would just love to talk to somebody involved with this movie that knows anything about like how it ended up like this.
Yeah, I mean, like, the first movie had Goro, and that was, like, really good, like, animatronics.
Yeah.
That looked way better than anything in this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. The first one looks like a movie.
Yeah.
This looks like, I mean, I think, you know, when we were watching it tonight on with Showgoers, you know, somebody said this looks like, you know, as cheap as, like, an episode of Hercules or something.
And there was one of those. I don't know if you've ever seen that. There was a Mortal Kombat prequel show.
Oh, I thought you were going to say there was like a Hercules Mortal Kombat crossover.
No, I wish.
What?
No.
Oh, yeah. The TV show.
Yeah, Conquest, which took place 500 years ago just so they can make it cheap enough of just like filming it in the woods and not having to like use modern settings.
So how is it taking place 500? Does it not have the Mortal Kombat characters we're familiar with?
Well, it kind of like the main character is this guy, Kung Lao, who is like the dude known as he's like the guy that Goro killed originally.
Right.
When Goro first showed up to get his like big winning streak. And it was like the whole thing was that Kung Lao was Earthrealm's champion. He was a Mortal Kombat champion. He beat up Shang Tsung until eventually Goro killed him. And this was about like basically just following Kung Lao around. So right. You had characters like there was like another Sub-Zero, but like his ancestor, Shao Kahn was around, Kitana, Raiden, anyone who was like ancient was there.
Right.
Shao Kahn looked way better because he actually had a better skull mask on.
It's so rare that a TV show's costume looks better than its movie counterpart.
Oh my God. Yeah. You know, they had a different guy playing Shang Tsung, but he was actually not bad. Okay. Yeah. And a lot of it was just kind of like namesake stuff.
Yeah.
Like there was like another Scorpion.
Anything Kano's. Anybody they could get away with.
Yeah, yeah. There were some good ideas. Like they had, you know, Kano in the first movie. He's like in the Black Dragon Clan, uh-huh. Like his criminal organization. So they just show like, all right, the Black Dragon's been around for like centuries, and then you could just kind of like lay the seeds there.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a very good show, but
was it? Had its would moments. You say it's better than Annihilation?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Annihilation is only like an hour 20 minutes.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. Tell me about it. That is and the credits are like 12 minutes long. So it's actually only like an hour and 10 minutes. If this movie was like 10 minutes longer, like the actual story was like 10 minutes longer, I don't think I would have made it. Yeah. But I mean, I can't remember if we've covered this previously, but you liked the first Mortal Kombat movie, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a guilty pleasure. Yeah, yeah.
It's also you don't watch it.
It gets the job done.
Okay.
And it's accurate. Like it does. Like it feels like they turned the video game and everything cool about it into a movie. They couldn't use all like the violence, you know, all the blood and stuff. But
yeah,
everything else was, you know, the characters looked the way they're supposed to. The characters acted how they were supposed to. Johnny Cage was hilarious. The guy who played Shang Tsung was, you know, he chewed the scenery.
That's enough.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, it gets the job done. I'm really actually, they just put the first one on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really looking forward to going back and finally watching that because I have not watched it in this entire year.
So it's going to feel so much better.
Yeah, I'm waiting until after the last night. I think I'm going to try to go and then I'm going to watch that one and see if it fills in any of these blanks for me of things where I go like, oh, okay.
It's another thing that's like why Annihilation's so bad is Mortal Kombat 1, the first movie, has so many fun either characters or performances. The guy who plays Kano was great. Goro was awesome. Johnny Cage stole the show.
Yeah.
Christopher Lambert was Raiden.
Yeah.
And you could see he's having so much fun with the role.
Yeah. That's like the number one, I think the perfect summary of his performance is that it looks like he's really having fun.
Yeah. Like he's just like, I love that this is my job. And and then even then it's like, hey, you want to do the second one? And he's like, hell no.
No, thank you.
And it's like, what else is he going to be doing? It's Christopher Lambert. He didn't really have much.
Waiting on
Highlander 6.
Yeah, waiting on a Highlander reunion of some sort. You never know.
But it's like all these characters and all these, either all the characters are killed off, the good ones, or the actors didn't want to return. So you're left with the two most mundane actors / characters in Liu Kang and Kitana.
They're just bland. They're so bland. Yeah. And their characters don't have to be, but it's like the way they're written and the way their performances are just very, you don't ever really feel like there's any internal struggle or, nothing really happens with Kitana. She does very little in the movie.
She doesn't. She's captured and then she just kind of like, she spits at Shao Kahn that one time.
That is one of my favorite parts in the movie, I will say. That part always cracks me up. Just this, and also it's like how gross the sound it makes when she does it.
Can I just say my favorite thing, having seeing this again, the one thing that I'll take away as the best is during the Sonya and Jax versus Cyrax, when Cyrax like shatters all the windows, their reactions to it is the funniest thing to me because it's like, I think they're supposed to be in like slow motion.
Yeah.
Like of just putting their arms up and like trying to shield themselves. But instead of actually being in slow motion, like they just told them, we're going to film you. Just do this slowly. Cause it looks so amazingly unnatural.
Yes. It does not fit with what is happening at all. And it looks very odd. Very hilarious. That is another great part. There's several parts in that little Cyrax scene where it's like you could go, I could find some stuff to enjoy about this.
Yeah.
There's like a couple stuff. There's some stuff in the fights and there's some stuff in the stunt work. And like that part when one of my absolute favorite parts in the movie is that part where Sonya and the way that they – and a lot of this movie is like shot really poorly, but they do this really well. And it's the part where Sonya kicks like a computer monitor right into this ninja's face. And like the way that they shoot it and the way it hits, it's just all done so well. And it gets me every time. I'm just like, man, if nothing else, that part was really great.
And also that really fake jumping from the explosion at the end of that
scene. Yeah. That super terrible in front of a green screen. I think somebody, I don't know if it was you, somebody said something about it looking like they just had to use the green screen at like the local weather station.
It looked like something from that Jack Black Be Kind Rewind movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would love to see the Be Kind Rewind version.
The sweeted version of Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Yeah. So question number four. Should people watch Mortal Kombat Annihilation?
It depends. Are you a fan of bad movies? Because it is, you know, I mean, the reason this whole experiment exists is because it's an entertainingly bad movie. I mean, I'm a guy who owns The Room.
Yeah.
I'm excited about the Mystery Science Theater reboot or, you know, revival. If you're like that, then yeah, it's a blast to watch. I mean, at no point does it drag, but it is completely terrible.
Watch it 6 or 70 more times and see if you feel like parts of it drag.
Oh no, you know what? I'll take your word for it. I think I'm all right.
I definitely feel like some parts of it. I just go like, let's just fast forward through this. But
what part in particular?
Oh Lord. Just like any time that Shao Kahn is talking is pretty mostly the talk. Well, I just watched this with someone last week who had never seen it before. Mm-hmm. And, well, actually it wasn't last week. It was a little bit further back, but it was the episode that came out this week. And she was talking about that. She felt like a big parts of the movie were boring because they had too much talking. And I was like, I hadn't really thought about it being boring. I just thought maybe it was just me because I've like seen it so many times. But she was like, I feel like this is a movie for kids, but kids would be bored by some of this. So I don't know, like the scenes with Well, I don't want to spoil too much of some. I've got some thoughts on some of these things that I want to save for the commentary track that I'm doing.
Thanks.
Which I was going to talk about this at the end, but I will say, since it came up now, thank you so much to all the Patreon backers who got us over the goal of now I have to record a commentary for the movie, since the DVD and the Blu-ray don't come with one. And as someone said in the chat tonight, it's like, I'm probably the world's leading expert on this movie now. But yeah, so maybe I'll hold off on that. But so yeah, I guess you'd say that if people are into bad movies, or maybe if they just really, if they really love Mortal Kombat, they've probably already seen it.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to think it's good. Like here's the thing. I got to see Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And like the original version where it was like completely insane.
Just a mess.
And I would tell people I had a blast, but I could in no good conscience tell you that that was a good show.
Right.
Because I was just like, had a huge smile on my face. Like, what am I even watching?
Yeah. That's definitely, I feel like that's a good, appropriate comparison to make to this movie. Question number five, finally.
Okay.
Now I think I know your answer to this because it's night 363, but should I keep doing this?
Yeah, of course.
Now that
you gotta see it through to the end.
Yeah. There's two nights left.
You want to live forever?
All right. Well, Gavin, thank you for talking to me about this. This has certainly been fun, and thank you for filling in some of the there's some gaps in the Mortal Kombat knowledge that you've filled in or kind of piqued my interest on a little bit. That I imagine I'm going to catch myself down some Mortal Kombat Wikipedia or YouTube rabbit holes tonight. Tell people where they can find you, where they can look for you, all that kind of stuff.
Well, I write for the website www.denofgeek.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Gavin4L.
Okay, and I'll put links, of course, to both of those in the show notes. Is there anything else you want to plug? Anything you want to tell people while you're here?
You will die.
All right, everybody. I don't think I can do anything much better than that, so I will just say, remember, be there for one another. You're a family now. Now it's going to sound like, I think you're the first person who's had something to put in front of their name. So now I'm like, oh yeah, that's no problem. And then I immediately mess it up.